Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi. To be or not to be, I think is the topic for tonight. How are you?
Good.
Dear God in heaven, no I didn't. It's insane weather out there. Pissing rain. It's the 16th of June and there's frogs
everywhere.
Everywhere. Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, as soon as it sets the rain, they'll be out looking for little bits and pieces of food. So you can't leave the door of the kitchen open.
They're or else
you're going to have frogs all over the gaff. So, Stephanie, welcome to the Critter Shed podcast.
Thanks very much.
You're not Stephanie Ennis, but you are related, right?
Yes, we are. We are indeed related. That's where the good looks come from. What? I'm sure you know that as soon as
radio.
I walked in. Yeah, which is why I can say that and get away with it.
Stephanie is my cousin.
Right.
And she's a graduate of Trinity Zoology.
Right.
And you're currently working on?
A project about bees on farms back in Trinity. I've just finished my PhD. That was in England. And now I've moved back.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And you're working with Jane
Stout. Yeah. Right. He was class.
Queen Bee. Yeah, that's what I call her. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to make a run for it because it's absolutely lashing rain and we're standing in the kitchen and we're going to make a run for the shed.
Okay, let's do it.
You ready?
All right.
Frogs everywhere. The plague of frogs in the garden. We're making a dash for the... for the shed.
Right.
Like you have to run the gauntlet of the frogs.
And we're all squished into the. Do we have three?
I have chairs here.
Chairs in here.
I'll just sit on the radio. But you really appreciate how small this place is.
So we made it.
We're alive.
And we're here.
We battled the frog
the
army.
Torrential rains of Irish summer.
Yes.
And I work on bees.
You're studying something that I would imagine is affected by the weather.
Yes. It's a bit of a running joke in ecology that like people who study bees are like fair weather ecologists because we only go out when the sun is out and it's warm and it's dry because that's when the bees come out. But in Ireland, it's you kind of have to compromise on that a little bit. So I've been getting drenched most of the time out looking for bees. But your luck.
So we're going to have a general chat about bees.
Yeah, okay.
Who aren't doing well.
No.
Like everything else.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of follow the same trend as all other wildlife and biodiversity, really.
Right.
You know, for the most part.
Right. So you're specialising in a specific type of bee, which is...
So my PhD research looked at solitary bees.
Okay.
So do you want to hear my, like, pitch?
Yes.
Like what? My party piece.
First of all, to my great shame, I only found out recently that there were things like... solitary bees. So what's a solitary bee apart from being a solitary bee?
Yes. So yeah. So this is like my party piece to make me like the interesting person at the gaff party.
Okay, yeah.
So in Ireland we have 98 species of bee.
Wow.
One of those is a honeybee. That is the only species that makes honey, that swarms, that is managed by beekeepers. Okay. And that is a managed species. It's generally not found in the wild. Does swarm a little bit in the wild, but mostly it's a managed species. Then we have about 20 species of bumblebee, and they're also social like honeybees. They live in nests, they have queens, they have workers, all the rest of it. But then the rest, like the other 77 species of bee, are solitary, and they don't have any of that social structure. So there aren't queens, there aren't workers, They live solitarily, one female, one nest. She provisions her nest, she lays her own eggs. Everybody is fertile, etc., etc. And those are the vast majority of bee species worldwide are solitary. And then you can sort of break up that group of solitary bees into sort of three different groups based on how they nest. So there are ground nesting species. These are the species that nest in the ground, surprisingly.
Yeah.
So the female will just dig a little hole in the ground, like down into the ground, and she'll excavate it out, and she will just lay an egg, gather pollen, put a little pollen ball on top of the egg, seal over that cell, and do that until she fills up the nest. And then you have species that are aerial nesting, so they nest in like cavities, and you know, like these bee hotels that people buy.
Yes,
those are the species that go into those.
Brilliant. Okay.
Aerial nesting species. Right. And then the third group are like cuckoo species, so they don't actually make their own nests; they just parasitize other bees. So they just
solitary bees.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So they're like, and there's like specific relationships, like specific species parasitize other specific species, and they just like sneak their eggs into the nest, and then those larvae like eat the food resources and sometimes the egg.
Holy shit. Yeah, so it's, there's some complex, intricate relationships out there in the bee world.
There's a lot going on.
Okay.
There's loads going on. Yeah. So yeah, so that's the thing. So most of our, like, none of our wild bee species in Ireland make honey.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So honeybees are domesticated bees.
Essentially. Yes. Right. Yeah. There are, I mean, in this country, there are elsewhere in the world, you know, wild species.
Yes.
But here and in the UK, the honeybees are managed. So they are similar to livestock, I suppose, in a way. Okay. Yeah, the way they're managed.
I have a fun fact that I want to check up with you. I heard that one teaspoon of honey is the life's work of 8 bees.
Maybe.
Yeah. It's not your area.
No, honeybees.
Maybe.
Yeah. I'm going to get love on every time I hear that.
We get all the puns out of the way now. All these.
No, they're just going to keep coming.
Honestly. I know, exactly.
Honeybees are like a really, really complex system. And there are people who are absolute experts in just honeybees. I am not one of those people. And they're fabulous.
we will get someone up to talk about honeybees someday. But the wild bee species being an indicator species of biodiversity and a healthy habitat, a healthy ecosystem, them not doing too well.
No, like, it's a classic story. So at the moment, the best statistic that we have tells us that about a third of our wild native bee species are threatened with extinction in Ireland. And most of that is due to the absolute classic reasons: habitat loss, fragmentation, intensive agriculture, urbanization, pesticide use, all of this stuff everybody like goes on about all the time. Yeah. But that's what it is.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
You know,
there's no magic bullet or
cure
or anything for it. It's not just Monsanto. It's
Monsanto
plus nowhere to live.
Yeah. It's death by a thousand cuts, right?
Yes.
It's the same for everything.
Same for amphibians. Yeah. That's my thing.
Yeah. It doesn't matter who you talk to, like, whether you're an insect person, the mammal person, you always come back to the same stuff over and over again.
Yeah. So on a local level, and a lot of people listen to this have a very healthy interest, which is, we're always grateful for people who are helping out wildlife in their gardens and their balconies and whatever. Mm. What can people do practically that will actually make a difference?
There's so much people. There's loads people can do. So I'm going to plug at this point.
Plug away.
The All-Ireland Pollinator Plan, which was a plan that was developed by two incredible bee experts in this country. My boss at the moment, Professor Jane Stout, and Dr. Una Fitzpatrick, who's at the National Biodiversity Data Centre.
Yeah.
And they developed this plan for how we can stop the decline of bees in Ireland and things we can do to that end. And they have a website, pollinators.ie, and they've done this with, like, no money, by the way. It's incredible. So the plan itself is 81 evidence-based actions. But if you are a person who wants to know, what can I do in my garden, or what can my local school do, or what can my local business do, go onto the website, because they have guides for every single different type of situation. So if you want to know what flowers to plant in your garden, or if you are somebody who is in a local council and you're interested in changing some of your management practices, there are guidelines for councils. So it's a really, really incredible resource, and I would really encourage everybody to go on pollinators.ie. Loads of great information.
You're a solitary bee
yeah.
woman.
Yeah.
So tell us about them. What do they look like? What's their biology? How do they live?
So the best thing about solitary bees is that they are very complex and they're very different depending on which species you're looking at. They range in their size. You get tiny, tiny species to like much bigger species like the size of bumblebees. You have these different nesting strategies. You have ones that parasitize. You have generalist species, specialist species. So they're very varied. I particularly focus on the ones that nest in the ground. And some of those are have a fairly similar biology. So they will, the female basically will emerge and she gets mated by a male rather quickly.
How long did it take?
Right.
So the male grabs her. Go on.
She doesn't have much to say about it.
Okay.
So she'll
I think it's the ones that when they emerge, I think I remember seeing something on the television. Where the males come out and they actually like really have aggro fights over the females.
So some of them you have like mating balls.
Okay.
Yeah, so some species which is like really gas. I mean not for like the female, but like there'll be one female and like 15 or 20 males will just try to mate with her at once and they'll form this mating ball and just be like rolling around the place. And sometimes, because basically the males emerge first and then they hang around waiting for the females, but sometimes they're just like really overeager and somebody goes after another male and then everybody thinks that's a female and you just have mating balls full of males like wasting all their time. It is gas.
The males emerge first.
Yeah, so it's really, so it's interesting. So the females generally, they can control whether they lay a male or a female egg. Mm. So when they are laying the eggs in a nest, if you imagine a vertical burrow, and you'll have some eggs at the bottom and more closer to the top. So generally the ones at the bottom will be females and the ones at the top are males. So then you've got to wait, right, for whoever's in front of you to get out before you can.
Oh, like a little queue. Yeah. That's amazing. I thought it would have been like temperature or something like that. That's my reptile.
Yeah, yeah. No, they are. Like
your reptile brain.
Yeah, that's my reptile fanboy thing.
They are heavily temperature dependent, of course. Bees are, generally. They need to have a certain level of temperature to be able to fly and get their flight muscles going and all the rest of it. And their cues, for the most part, of when to actually emerge will be controlled by temperature. But just, yeah, how the males come out first is just controlled by the female. That's
really,
in there.
Really cool. That's a very interesting fact. That's mad.
Definitely.
And then after that, females after mating.
Yeah, yeah.
Then she is obviously gravid, has to feed up.
Yeah, so the female gets mated and then like the work really starts for her, which is a classic of the animal kingdom. Like the male just continues to fly around looking for females. He might disperse somewhere else looking for more females, whereas a female's got to start working right away. So she'll have to feed herself, and then she's got to dig a nest. And if you like a size of a bee, I'm talking about smaller than a bumblebee, digging into the ground with her front legs. Mm. To get a nest, to establish her nest.
We're talking like half a centimetre?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's the sort of size you're talking. For her to dig out with her front legs, and some of them go down 20, 30 centimetres down into the ground. Yeah, yeah, I'm not joking.
Wow.
And so it takes incredible strength. And she's doing all this and the males are like, bye, see ya. Thanks very much.
In time-honoured
fashion.
On
to the next one.
I feel guilty.
Anyway, so she digs out her nest all on her own and then she will lay her first egg and now she's got to go and she's got to start collecting food for that egg because she's got to provision that egg with enough food to develop from an egg into a larvae all the way into adulthood because a lot of these species will actually overwinter in the nest as adults. So she's got a heavy burden to provide that much food. And she'll continue to do that basically until she runs out of energy and she dies.
Wow.
Or the weather turns. So lots of these species are only active for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Like one of the reasons we don't have a huge amount of scientific information about their specific ecologies or biologies, etc., because they're quite difficult to study.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many of them and they're only active for a few weeks and then they're gone. So it's a really heavy burden on her to provide that much food for all of her eggs and then she just dies.
That's what I was going to ask. So when you say they're active and then they're gone, they die?
Yeah, no, she died. They all die. No. Yeah.
So they have a very short...
Yeah.
They emerge.
Yeah.
They mate. They lay eggs.
And that's it.
That's it. That's it. She spends her whole life digging a nest, laying eggs, provisioning those eggs, making sure they have enough food to survive all the way into adulthood. And then she just like flies off into the distance and dies. And the males just, you know, get their end away for their entire lives.
And they die.
Yeah, they die.
So they have like the perfect existence. That's amazing. Please, Buddha, reincarnate me as a solitary being.
From the time that the female emerges and dies, what are we talking there?
Depends on the species, but it can be as little as 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Some of them longer. Some of them will be active for, you know, 8 or 12 weeks, depending. And also depends on the weather conditions. Like if it just gets too cold, then they'll just die off. And then we get into things like how much forage is there around for them to actually provision the eggs with, and all of that has an impact on how long they're active for.
So we have a tradition here in the Critter Shed of homing in on riding.
Okay, yeah.
So I would love to know the mechanics of bee mating. You thought you were going to get away with this, didn't you? But you're not. So just talk me through it. From the time that she emerges, how do the males find her? What do they use to mate her? It's all fascinating.
Usually it's pheromones that they use to find her. So she'll give off a scent that they'll follow. And the whole process is very quick.
Don't look at me, all right?
What do they use to mate?
They have small genitals.
They're small penises, small willies.
Yeah, okay.
Are they willies?
Call them willies. Let's call them willies.
Yeah,
it's
just a technical term.
Yeah, it's not my specific expertise. Right. I don't pay too much attention to the right. I don't pay too much attention to the males at all, to be honest. It's mostly the females that I actually care about.
But do they have something that resembles a penis? Like, is there penetration?
It doesn't look like a penis. It's like, well, actually, it depends on the species what the male genitalia look like.
Okay.
So you sort of like, you can flip them out when you're trying to identify the species, and they have lots of different shapes.
Right.
Like spiders. Spiders are ID'd by the male's reproductive organs.
Right.
Yeah. Because some of them can be quite, I would imagine, it's the same with bees. Some of them could look very similar to the naked eye, but if you want to.
Exactly the same thing. So you'll just like pull out their genitals to be sure what it is.
like a little passport.
Yeah.
Which is really weird.
It's really, really weird. Just, I'm so sorry. I'm just going to have to flip this out here.
Do you know much about the bee orchids and what they get up to?
I know that they're very cool and that they are very bold how they operate.
They mimic
a female. Mimic a female bee, and so they attract male bees and they try to mate with the flower because they think it's a female, and that's how they get pollinated. You know,
and when you look at a bee orchid, they actually look like the rear end
they
of a female
really
bee.
They really do.
Because the males come out first, the orchids take advantage of that. So they've evolved to attract the males because the males are around first, and this incredibly complex, insane sort of interdependence, or not even interdependence, what would you call it?
Well, it's almost like a parasitic relationship.
It's a helpful relationship.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's a helpful male being. He's wasting all his energy.
He's just getting it off again and again.
Well, I suppose.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's like the bee equivalent of a blow-up doll.
That took 15 minutes to get there.
I'm so bad.
It's good.
I can't get the blow up doll.
I'm trying to push that up.
So many botanists out there like, fuck this guy. How dare he?
How dare you say that? Orchids are the business. I actually saw some dude that I was out in Bull Island and they're starting to pop up.
I haven't seen any here since I've come
Bull
over.
Bull Island. We'll do a little walking. Really nice out there. You were saying earlier on about the temperature having a big importance on the development stages and when they do what they do. With that ever-increasing threat of global climate change, is that another little one of the 1,000 cuts they're getting?
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, climate change is bad news for bees in lots of ways.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
That's one of them. Okay. I mean, one of the other things we're seeing is like these range shifts that you see a lot with butterflies where they're sort of moving north.
Yes.
They're sort of following, they're expanding their range in some places and then other places they're being lost from where it's getting warmer and warmer. And bees is sort of a similar thing is happening. So we've actually had quite a few colonizations from sort of mainland Europe into the UK and then over to us.
So I would imagine like a lot of Irish fauna is quite poor. Our biodiversity, let's say, is very poor compared to mainland Europe and even the UK because of the Ice Age and the Irish Sea filling in. So I imagine that bees would be a lot less, species-wise, would be a lot less numerous over here.
Yeah, so in the UK even, they have in the region of 275 species of bee compared to our 98. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then if you, once you go onto the continent, it's even more.
Yeah.
And get down to the Mediterranean. Yeah.
God damn you,
I know. Fucking Brits again. Well, anyway. But we have had our most recent colonizer. I shouldn't say this.
No, it's fine.
Listen, it still hurts. It's only been 150 years. It still hurts.
Bee species is the tree bumblebee, Bombus hypnorum, which is a recent arrival into Ireland, has probably come over from the UK, where it was is also non-native, and it's just spread really, really rapidly.
It's getting warmer for it.
Yeah, and the range is expanding, and then it's quite easy for it to make the hop over to Ireland. So they're starting to crop up, so keep an eye out for them. They're really nice. They're the only cavity nesting species of bumblebee that we have now. Awesome. Most of them nest in the ground. Yeah.
Now, do we have any specific Irish bee species?
There is one.
Oh, yes!
It is a bumblebee. There is one species of bumblebee. It's not a specific species, but there is a particular form of a bumblebee species that is only found in the Aran Islands.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It evolved out there? Or?
It's not a particular species. It's just a form of a species that we only have on the Aran Islands. So
went
we
to
have
the
something.
Island. Yeah, we have something.
Yeah.
Went to the island, married its cousins. And now they sit in the porch playing their banjo. And they look a little different. Yeah.
Decided to ignore everybody else. Just did their own thing out on the Aran Islands.
Brilliant.
Which populations are wont to do.
So does that mean if they were to come back to the mainland and mate with the same species, obviously the same species, but they're slightly different?
I think they would probably still be able to have fertile offspring because they haven't moved that far away from each other.
Right.
It does pick a form, but I'm not sure.
They're on their way.
Give another 100,000 years, you never know. Lots of our bee species are sort of, as they're declining, there are strongholds sort of in the west of Ireland because it's more flower rich.
Mm-hmm.
And there's less intensive agriculture out there than there is on this side of the country. So quite a few of the species are being pushed to that side.
So I have a question. So if I see a solitary bee around my garden or something, like, how would you recognise where a bee has burrowed and laid eggs? What does it look like?
Oh, yeah. So it's it sounds like it's really nondescript. It's just a hole in the ground, like a tiny hole in the ground. But once you get your eye in, they're really quite distinctive. So when they're active and they're actually building out the nests, what you'll see is like a volcano of earth around the hole. So they're like little mini volcanoes.
Brilliant.
So lots of the, even though they're solitary bees, right, lots of them nest in what are called aggregations. So it's just lots of females of the same species nesting near to each other. There's no social cooperation between them. Yeah. They just nest in the same place. It's kind of like a housing estate where no one talks to each other.
Brilliant.
That's what I think of it. And so those are quite easy to spot, especially for the bigger species, because then you've got lots, like multiple little volcanoes in the same place. Those are the kind of things I worked on for like the last 3 years while I was in England. So I definitely became that person who's just going around staring at the ground constantly, like, what is that woman doing? Got asked some really odd questions while I was like out and about in Cambridge. Like, what are you doing there, strange girl?
I remember you did an interview for BBC, local BBC over there. Yeah. And I remember after listening to you talking about them, I was like so into solitary bees. And I never had looked for them before. So I was fishing on the Barrow. And all along the Barrow are these like high soil banks.
Yes.
And there were some solitary bees going into it horizontally and then going down vertically.
Yeah.
And it was like this little hive of activity. Yeah. Sorry to say that. Some buzz. But it was deadly actually seeing them. And it's, again, like you were saying, if you weren't looking,
you wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know.
It's amazing. Like, once you get your eye in for it, you start seeing them everywhere. I mean, that's one of the brilliant things about nature generally. Just like the tiniest bit of knowledge, and suddenly you, it's like you open up this whole new world to yourself. And you didn't realize it was there. And solitary bees are definitely one of those things. And yeah, so part of my PhD, I did like a Ranicism science project, trying to get people to record the nest sites, and loads of people got in touch, just emailed me, were like, I never even knew solitary bees were a thing, and they're all over my garden, I never noticed before. Like, it's class. They're brilliant. That's, and they're really so brilliant, and they're safe. They can sting, but they're very docile. It's very difficult to get them to sting you, and their stings are very weak. Like, bees kind of get a bad press. When I was younger, like, I was really afraid of bees. Everybody was, right?
Of course.
Like, you were trained to be terrified of them. But the vast majority of bees are very docile. They'll only sting you if you piss them off. And for solitary species, their stings are really weak. Some of them can't even break the skin. It's the honeybees who have given the bad press because they have a barbed sting. So they're the ones...
You think they were the sweethearts.
I know,
But there they are, stinging people left, right and centre.
They still, I mean, they still won't, like, know, unless you annoy them. But they... because they have a barbed sting, their sting will stay in the skin, and when they pull away, they rip all their guts out. That's how they, that's how they die. So honeybees are the only ones who can only sting once. That's their thing. That's right. All other species of bee can sting multiple times.
When they rip their guts out, they give a pheromone off to
let you know. Other bees know, like, something's going down over here.
That's
amazing. But only honeybees can do that.
The solitary bee that you were studying, describe it.
So there was, I was studying four different species, but I will describe my favourite.
We love people's favourites.
We always, everyone has a favourite. So my favourite is called the tawny mining bee, and it's gorgeous. It's
great,
like,
name.
It is great, isn't it?
Tawny.
Yeah,
I like it.
It's absolutely gorgeous. So it's like red and orange, bright red and orange. It's really distinctive. It's really easy to spot. It's about the size of maybe a bumblebee worker. So it's one of the biggest species of solitary bee. And it's also one of the first that becomes active. So they sort of emerge anytime from sort of the end of February, really. March, April, they're kind of active around that time. And they're just gorgeous. They are so gorgeous.
Oh, she's definitely my cousin.
So tell me how many legs, how many segments, yada yada yada.
Six legs, head, thorax, abdomen are the segments. I should say the females are the ones that are really gorgeous. The males are nice, but they are scrawny and not as pretty. Like a classic Irish man. They're a very common species in the UK. They were present here. Then we thought they'd gone extinct for like 50 years. And then in like 2012, they were recorded in a couple of places. So down in Waterford and in Dublin. And we're starting to get a trickle of records for them around the Dublin area. They've been recorded again this year, so that's really exciting. They're a common species, but they're probably one of those ones that would be vulnerable to things like lack of flowers, right? Because they're one of those ones that's active really early in the year, and that's when we have these gaps in food, these food gaps. Most people have flowers in their gardens that flower sort of in the summertime, and generally like around the country, around our landscapes, because we've lost all of our wildflower meadows. There's very little available in terms of food at that time of the year. So it's our sort of spring species and autumn species that are
struggling.
Yeah.
So I was a bit, actually that answers the question I was going to say. With certain species, bees would be probably heavily reliant on native flowers and plants as opposed to what you go and buy in your garden center.
Absolutely. I mean, native flowers are the best, both for bees and for things that, other things that feed on them, but also for our botanical diversity and etc. So if you're looking to sort of plant flowers for bees or for insects, go for the native species, go for the native wildflowers. That's what we have lost to a gargantuan proportion. Lots of the things that we plant in our gardens, they look really nice, but they have no nectar or pollen. They're annual species. So they offer very little in terms of food. Okay. So perennials generally are better. Natives are better. If you're unsure, pollinators.ie, there's guides.
On
specific species. But another good trick is if you go to your garden centre and you're looking around and you're thinking, I would like to get something that's going to be good for bees or butterflies, just look. There will be bees and things on the plants in the garden centre. Look what they're visiting. And if they're covering one particular, buy that, you know? Like, that's probably the easiest thing if you find yourself monstrously unprepared when you enter the garden centre.
Can we also talk about weeds, what we label weeds, which drives me nuts because, you know, weeds are just plants by another name. I mean, are they important for bees?
Yes, they're absolutely so important for bees. So things like white clover, dandelions, things that are come up in our lawns early in the season, they provide a great food source for bees. But again, we are bed into just getting rid of them because, you know, their flowers in the wrong place, therefore they're weeds. This sort of tidiness attitude is problematic.
But actually, when you look at them, they're beautiful.
They're gorgeous.
They're really gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's that really gets my goat. It's this obsession with tidying everything up. And nature doesn't do tidy. It just doesn't.
I know. But it makes no sense when you really think about it. You know, why? Why should nature be tidy? Yeah. Why is it? I mean, are rainforests tidy? No, they're not. You know, why do we expect that from nature?
I think we forget that everything is in a circle and that everything is food for something else.
Yeah, yeah.
And that if you take away part of a circle, then you're sort of stopping it or making it difficult to bridge that gap.
Yeah.
So, yeah, something that falls down and is rotting, somebody's going to enjoy that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's that Victorian mindset. Blind Boy actually did a great podcast about it last week.
It's
really good.
Yeah.
And it's like, he was saying, it's that Victorian mindset going back to like when the Brits wanted to make everything England and prim and proper and make their lawns look like works of art as opposed to the wild spaces that they should be. And it's kind of bled into a lot of places in the world. Look at America even, the obsession with the green lawn. Nothing
it's,
alive there, green desert.
It's very cultural now.
Yeah.
You know, it's so ingrained culturally that there's expectation that, you know, you need to have a tidy garden, you need to have short grass and that's the way it should be. You know, that's kind of a cultural norm now. But there is a change coming. I think people...
I can really notice it.
Like, it's not all doom and gloom. People want to do something.
Yes.
People are tuned into it.
Yes.
And they just don't know. Like, and why would you? I didn't know until I took a degree in zoology. Like, I shouldn't have to take a degree in zoology to know that flowers in the garden are not weeds.
Yeah. Mm. And that's the massive point. And that's why people like you are massively important, because there's a lot of zoologists. No, in fairness, I'm not just saying it because you're my cuz, but there's a lot of people out there who can't communicate about nature and can't simplify it. They're kind of having this pissing contest to pronounce Latin names. And it's like, that's great. And we need that for when you're studying these things and to find out the facts. But when you're communicating to Mr. Bus Driver or Mr. Postman or the lady in the shop or, you know,
or me,
you know what I mean? Whoever, you just the regular people out there who want to make a difference.
People want to. You know, it's so important, I think, to democratize the language. And we all have a stake in it, right?
Oh, we're democratizing it all.
Yeah, yeah.
Just talk about dicks. It's great.
Everybody join in.
What do you study? How big is its cock?
I'm telling you, we're going to take over the world.
I just enjoy how the females have all the power in it. Yeah. That's my But we all have a stake in it, right? Yeah. Like, this is what's frustrating. I think ecology, to a large extent, science can have this idea of the ivory towers and everybody hates experts and blah, 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 blah. But nature, biodiversity, our natural world, we all have such a stake in that. This is our land, this is our country. Like, anyone who lives here, wherever you live, you have a stake in the nature that surrounds you, right? You benefit from it, it serves you, and we're a part of that system, right?
And we're all ecologists, really.
We all are, absolutely.
I mean, and conservationists.
It's 100%, like 100%.
Yeah.
It's,
everybody's
and people,
a conservationist.
Everybody is a conservationist. And people don't even realize the knowledge that they have, you know? Like, the more you talk to people who are like, oh, I'm just an amateur. Like, that is the most ridiculous sentence. I've talked to some people who have an encyclopedic knowledge of their local patch, like their local nature reserve or whatever. And they're like, oh, but I'm just an amateur. Yeah. I don't know anything about it. Yeah. But this is the species list for this site going back 20 years.
When we were recently, we were looking for historic frog breeding sites around Dublin. Yeah. And all we did was stop old men walking dogs or old women walking their dogs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you just stop them and you go, do you remember, do you live around here long? And they look at you like you have six heads. And you go, do you remember around your frogs here? Oh, yeah, over in that corner there.
Yeah.
See that willow? That started growing and dried the pond up. Bang.
Brilliant.
And it's like, there's your historical site. Pull the willow out.
Yeah.
You have to take some trees down. But then the pond is restored.
Yeah.
So is there anything else? That was amazing.
That's really awesome. I'm so glad you came over and had a chat with us. Because we've been planning this for like a long time. And
I know.
You've been very busy.
Yes. Yes. A busy bee.
We have to.
Oh boy.
But so again, once again, we're going to shout out to the pollinators.ie.
Yeah. Get on there.
Pollinators.ie.
Loads and loads of information. Also, if you have the time, I would really encourage you to get involved and do some citizen science yourself. So they are, the National Biodiversity Data Centre are collecting fit counts, which are basically you go and look at a patch of flowers for 10 minutes and record insects visiting flowers. Oh. And then if you submit that to the website, that would be a massive, massive thing to do. Monitoring is so important. So if you have the time and you feel inclined, please do that. And you will find information about that on Pollinators.
It'd be great things to do with kids.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. With your own kids.
Yeah.
Especially if you have kids out there, or if you have nephews and nieces and you like to take them out, do something in nature with them, because that's planting the seed for the next generation.
There are amazing places for bees in really urbanized areas.
Yeah.
So there's another PhD student, Keane White, in
brilliant student.
He works on urban bees. So lots of his sites are like Stevens Green, Marion Square, like these really, really urban areas, but there's bees there.
That's great.
So very slick suited urban bees.
Top hats, canes.
But that's Jane's work now in Trinity has really, really kind of turned. Yeah, it's amazing what has happened in that campus. Like, it's just drawing these insects in from everywhere, and it goes to show you, if you put the plants and the habitat that they need, they will show up.
If you plant it, they will come.
Well, that's a good way to end that.
Great minds.
Thanks a million for coming on.
That was brilliant. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
Now, before we actually do buzz off, didn't you say you'd sort me out with some treats for my cane toad?
Oh, yeah.
Terry.
I have a cane toad called Terry.
Yeah, you want to.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.